Chapter 5. The days that followed were bad. Garrick's mind escaped from the harness of sanity and ran wild in the hot land of delirium. He panted and twisted his fever-flushed face from side to side. He cried and whimpered in the big bed. The stump of his leg puffed up angrily, and the stitches were drawn so tight it seemed they must tear out of the swollen flesh. The infection oozed yellow and foul-smelling onto the sheets. Ada stayed with him all that time. She swabbed the sweat from his face and changed the dressings on his stump. She held the glass for him to drink and gentled him when he raved. Her eyes sunk darkly into their sockets with fatigue and worry, but she would not leave him. Wait could not bear it. He had the masculine dread of suffering that threatened to suffocate him if he stayed in the room. Every half hour or so he came in and stood next to the bed, and then he turned away and went back to his restless wandering around the house. Ada could hear his heavy tramp along the corridors. Sean stayed in the house also. He sat in the kitchen or at the far end of the veranda. No one would speak to him, not even the servants. They chased him when he tried to sneak into the bedroom to see Garrick. He was lonely with the desolate loneliness of the guilty, for Gary was going to die. He knew it by the evil silence that hung over the Thunis corral. There was no chatter, nor pot clatter from the kitchen, no rich, deep laughter from his father. Even the dogs were subdued. Death was at Thunis corral. He could smell it on the soiled sheets that were brought through to the kitchen from Garrick's room. It was a musty smell, the smell of an animal. Sometimes he could almost see it. Even in bright daylight, sitting on the veranda, he sensed it crouched near him, like a shadow on the edge of his vision. It had no form as yet. It was a darkness, a coldness that was gradually building up around the house, gathering its strength until it could take his brother. On the third day, Wade Courtney came roaring out of Garrick's room. He ran through the house and out into the stable yard.
"Carly, where are you? Get a saddle onto Ruiberg. Hurry, man! Hurry, damn you! He's dying! You hear me? He's dying!"
Sean didn't move from where he sat against the wall next to the back door. His arm tightened around Tinker's neck, and the dog touched his cheek with a cold nose. He watched his father jump up onto the stallion's back and ride. The hooves beat away towards Ladyburg, and when they were gone he stood up and slipped into the house. He listened outside Garrick's door, and then he opened it quietly and went in. Ada turned towards him. Her face was tired. She looked much older than her 35 years, but her black hair was drawn back behind her head into a neat bun, and her dress was fresh and clean. She was still a beautiful woman, despite her exhaustion. There was a gentleness about her, a goodness that suffering and worry could not destroy. She held out her hand to Sean, and he crossed and stood beside her chair and looked down at Garrick. Then he knew why his father had gone to fetch the doctor. Death was in the room. Strong and icy cold hovered over the bed. Garrick lay very still. His face was yellow, his eyes were closed, and his lips were cracked and dry. All the loneliness and the guilt came swelling up into Sean's throat and choked him into sobs. sobs that forced him to his knees and put his face into Ada's lap and cried. He cried for the last time in his life. He cried as a man cries, painfully, each sob tearing something inside him. Wait Courtney came back from Ladyburg with the doctor. Once more Sean was driven out and the door closed. All night he heard them working in Garrick's room, the murmur of their voices and the scuff of feet on the yellow wood floor. In the morning it was over. The fever was broken, and Garrick was alive. Only just alive. His eyes were sunk into dark holes like those of a skull. His body and his mind were never to recover completely from that brutal pruning. It was slow, a week before he was strong enough to feed himself. His first need was for his brother. Before he was able to talk above a whisper, it was, "Where's Sean?" And Sean, still chastened, sat with him for hours at a time. Then, when Garrick slept, Sean escaped from the room, and with a fishing rod or his hunting sticks and Tinker barking behind him, went into the veldt. It was a measure of Sean's repentance that he allowed himself to be contained within the sick room for such long periods. It chafed him like ropes on a young colt. No one would ever know what it cost him to sit quietly next to Garrick's bed, while his body itched and burned with unexpended energy and his mind raced restlessly. Then Sean had to go back to school. He left on a Monday morning while it was still dark. Garrick listened to the sounds of departure, the whicker of the horses outside on the driveway, and Ada's voice reciting last-minute instructions. "I've put a bottle of cough mixture under your shirts. Give it to Fraulein as soon as you unpack. Then she'll see that you take it at the first sign of a cold." "Yes, ma." "There are 6 vests in the small case. Use a new one every day." "Vests are sissy things." "You will do as you're told, young man." Wait's voice. "Hurry up with your porridge. We've got to get going if I'm to have you in town by 7 o'clock. "Can I say goodbye to Gary?" "You said goodbye last night. He'll be asleep now." Garrick opened his mouth to call out, but he knew his voice would not carry. He lay quietly and listened to the chairs scraping back from the dining room table, the procession of footsteps out onto the veranda, voices raised in farewells, and at last the wheels of the buggy, crunching gravel as they moved away down the drive. It was very quiet after Sean had left with his father. After that, the weekends were for Garrick the only bright spots in the colourless passage of time. He longed for them to come, and each one was an eternity after the last. Time passes slowly for the young and the sick. Ada and Wait knew a little of how he felt. They moved the centre of the household to his room. They brought 2 of the fat leather armchairs from the lounge and put them on each side of his bed and spent the evenings there. Wait, with his pipe in his mouth and a glass of brandy at his elbow, whittling at the wooden leg he was making and laughing his deep laugh. Ada, with her knitting, and the 2 of them trying to reach him. Perhaps it was this conscious effort that was the cause of their failure. Or perhaps it's impossible to reach back down the years to a small boy. There's always that reserve, that barrier between the adult and the secret world of youth. Garrick laughed with them, and they talked together, but it wasn't the same as having Sean there. During the day, Ada had the running of a large household. There were 15,000 acres of land and 2,000 head of cattle that needed Wait's attention. That was the loneliest time for Garrick. If it had not been for the books, he might not have been able to bear it. He read everything that Ada brought to him, Stevenson, Swift, Defoe, Dickens, and even Shakespeare. Much of it he didn't understand, but he read hungrily, and the opium of the printed word helped him through the long days until Sean came home each Friday. When Sean came home, it was like a big wind blowing through the house. Doors slammed, dogs barked, servants scolded, and feet clattered up and down the passages. Most of the noise was Sean's, but not all of it. There were Sean's followers, youngsters from his class at the village school. They accepted Sean's authority as willingly as did Garrick, and it was not only Sean's fists that won this acceptance, but also the laughter and the sense of excitement that went with them. They came out to Theunis Corral in droves that summer, sometimes as many as three on one bare-backed pony, sitting like a row of sparrows on a fence rail. They came for the added attraction of Gary's stump. Sean was very proud of it. "That's where the doctor sewed him up," pointing to the row of stitch marks along the pink fold of scar tissue.
"Can I touch it, man?"
"Not too hard, or it'll burst open." Garrick had never received attention like this in his life before. He beamed round the circle of solemn, wide-eyed faces.
"It feels funny. Sort of hot. Was it sore? How did he chop the bone? With an axe?"
"No." Sean was the only one in a position to answer technical questions of this nature.
"With a saw. Just like a piece of wood."
He made the motions with his open hand. But even this fascinating subject couldn't hold them for long, and presently there would be a restlessness among them.
"Hey, Sean, Carl and I know where there's a nest of squawkers. You want to have a look? Or, let's go and catch frogs."
And Garrick would cut in desperately.
"You can have a look at my stamp collection if you like. It's in the cupboard there." "No, we saw it last week. Let's go."
This was when Ada, who had been listening to the conversation through the open kitchen door, brought in the food. Cooksuckers fried in honey. Chocolate cakes with peppermint icing. Watermelon confit. And half a dozen other delicacies. She knew they wouldn't leave until it was finished. And she knew also that there'd be upset stomachs when it was. But that was preferable to Garrick lying alone and listening to the others riding off into the hills. The weekends were short, gone in a breathless blur. Another long week began for Garrick. There were eight of them, eight dreary weeks before Dr. Van Ruin agreed to let him sit out on the veranda during the day. Then, suddenly, the prospect of being well again became a reality for Garrick. The leg that Wait was making was nearly finished. He shaped a leather bucket to take the stump and fitted it to the wood with flat-headed copper nails. He worked carefully, moulding the leather and adjusting the straps that would hold it in place. Meanwhile, Garrick exercised along the veranda, hopping beside Ada with his arm around her shoulder, his jaws clenched with concentration, and the freckles very prominent on his face that had been without the sun for so long. Twice a day, Ada sat on a cushion in front of Garrick's chair and massaged the stump with methylated spirits to toughen it for its first contact with the stiff leather bucket.
"I bet old Sean'll be surprised, eh, when he sees me walking around?"
"Everyone will," Ada agreed. She looked up from his leg and smiled.
"Can't I try it on now? Then I can go fishing with him when he comes on Saturday."
"You mustn't expect too much, Gary. It isn't going to be easy at first. You'll have to learn to use it, like riding a horse. You remember how often you fell off before you learnt to ride?"
"But can I start now?"
Ada reached for the spirits bottle, poured a little into her cupped hand, and spread it on the stump.
"We'll have to wait till Dr. Van Roan tells us you're ready. It won't be long now."
It wasn't. After his next visit, Dr. Van Roan spoke to Waite as they walked together to the doctor's trap.
"You can try him with the peg leg. It'll give him something to work for. Don't let him overtire himself. And watch the stump doesn't get rubbed raw. We don't want another infection."
Peg leg.
Waite's mind echoed the ugly word as he watched the trap out of sight.
Peg leg.
He clenched his fists at his sides, not wanting to turn and see the pathetically eager face behind him on the veranda.